Hello, and welcome back to Iambic Poetry Podcast. I am your host, Sharon Smith, and this is our second part of our two-part episode with Coon the Poet. Today, Coon will talk about his U.S. tour, and we will go into how he would have been if he was the Poet Laureate. Then we'll go into our normal section questions, the page versus the stage, and our top five rappers. But sit back and relax while we continue with Coon the Poet.
Most definitely. So where'd you go in the East Coast? Did you like go from the East to the South, or was you mostly just sticking around like in the North, New York, Boston, or you know, that part of the area?
Nah, man, I went straight across the map. Okay. I got in my car, and this was after I heard you mention like the physician working the STARS program, right? At recovery specialist. This was after I was actually fired from that job. And this was after like a breakup. Relationship. This was after like everything on this side. I felt like everything was coming to a close. Like I had exhausted all that I could possibly do at that point, at that age, at that place in our city. And so I was in desperate need of to go elsewhere. Right, like something was tugging in the East Coast. So long story short, I had a fairly brand new car from working that job, and I just decided one night I was kicking with one of my closest homegirl. Shout out to the Eva Harden, and she was just like, "Coon, you got to get out of here. You got to go." And I remember like looking to her and saying, "Go where though?" Right? I was feeling the same thing that a lot of people in Sacramento feel when they like kind of like just. There's nothing else. There's nothing left, right?
Right.
Here. And that kind of like that hopelessness of this is all that life has to offer. So, after she said, she was like, "Look, go to the East Coast. Don't you got family out there? Isn't your grandfather out there? Like with my brothers out there." And when she said East Coast, she was referring to like the Maryland, D.C. area.
Right.
And then immediately that's where like a light started shining. And like a glimmer of hope, actually started like flickering. And I remember, like the light came on. I was like, "Huh." And so I actually announced it at Mahogany one night when I was I came in for an open mic, and I had performed a new piece, and then I had announced like, "Yo, I'm getting ready to gear up and go on my journey. I'm going to the East Coast." And as I started saying that, like I wasn't even planning or preparing to say that, but as soon as I let it out of my mouth, I started shaking. And that's when I knew that it was real. That no matter what, at this point, I could not backpedal because I had people like literally, like in support. Everybody started cheering. I had people come up to me like, "Yo, let me know what I can do. How we can help." And so, from that moment, I set up a goal for me. Had a lot of support from our city. I shortly was and around that time I was voted best male spoken word artist in the Sounds of Soul Music Awards. So first award. Once again, I let the people at the award show know as well, and it was a lot of donation. I actually ended up raising about maybe like close to $3,000.
Okay.
On record, off record. On record, a few hundred. Off record, with folks showing up to the show, just putting money in my hand. And or people like on standby while I was traveling, sending me money. So I had sort of was a lot of support. And to this day, I'll tell people, and I've always let everybody know as I was traveling, I'm here on behalf of my city. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my city. And this is so Sacramento can see the rest of the country. especially on the art on the artist level. So I went from, I got in my car, I left actually September 19th of 2014. Got in my car and I drove from Sacramento through Salt Lake City, Utah, through Wyoming, Nebraska, I think Iowa as well. And I actually ended up in Chicago.
Okay.
Chicago, I spent about four days in Chicago. I was the only person I knew in Chicago was an artist that used to frequent the scene, by the way, by the name of Cotton Campbell.
Okay.
Miss Cotton actually, she was a huge supporter of the Illegal Tag Team. Well, she used to like buy our albums and then put them in gift packages. And give them, like, she would buy them in bulk, like buy 20 albums, 20 CDs, and then give them to people as gifts. So she, when I got out there, she was so excited I was coming. She made phone calls to everybody in the scene. She had already been out there for about a year. She made phone calls and got me two shows lined up as features, got me two feature shows. And then took me around to all the different open mics out there, got me real connected with the poetry scene that way. And then after I did my last show, I kept going. That's when I knew that the journey was real. I made my way to Pittsburgh, to Ohio, spent time with family, popped in at a few more venues and open mics. And the whole idea was just to build relationships. All I knew in my heart, I didn't have a big plan other than be cool the poet. Do exactly what you did in Sacramento, but do it across the map. Made my way all the way, kept going, Maryland, Virginia, D.C. Spent the majority of my time out in that area, building a bond with my little brothers, as well as like really running that circuit out there in D.C., Maryland, so they call it DMV, DC, Maryland, Virginia. That scene is like the Olympics for poetry. I was blessed to be able to get features on stages like Bus Boys and Poets, founded on the idea of the legendary Langston Hughes, as well as a few other stages. I actually ended up doing I actually ended up having 30 shows with my name on it by the time I made my way back home. The furthest across the map that I went was actually Rochester, New York. And so after about eight and a half months, I realized it was time to come back home. And so I geared up and I tried to make it back home before Mother's Day of 2015.
Oh.
And, I actually made it back like a day and a half after Mother's Day. Yeah, that was that journey.
Wow. Oh, dang. That's a journey, man. I mean, I'm going to say like that. That's a journey. So you were on for Sounds of Soul. You were a winner or your nomination?
No, I ended up winning the award.
Nice.
Here.
And also you got the, in 2018, you also got the award for the North California Entertainment Music Award, too.
Yeah, so that, I don't know if you want to, yeah, I actually have that with me. The Sounds of Soul Award, a plaque is actually at my mama's house.
Okay.
And then, yeah, 2018. Actually, it was in 2019, but I guess it was for the year of 2018.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The Northern California. Are you on video right now? Or are you? Cause I know you tapped off.
I'm on video. I can see. Yeah, I can see you and stuff. I'm on. So, I see you.
Northern California Music Awards.
Congrats. Awesome.
And not, you know, these are the parts I don't share too often with folks because, you know, in the poetry scene, we have this big thing about folks. There's a lot of folks that's always looking for somebody to carry ego.
Yeah.
And there's always folks looking to try to downplay who and what somebody has accomplished based on the fact that they think that they're full of themselves.
Right.
And not understanding that in order to be anything on this, in order to be who you're called to be, you're going to have to know who you are.
Most definitely.
And you're going to have to move in extreme confidence. And a lot of people don't know the lack of confidence I battle with. A lot of people don't.
I'll let you finish off. I was going to say something about that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know how much strength it took to battle a lot of fears, a lot of the doubt, a lot of the lack of believing in self, a lot of the low self-esteem. And that's, in a nutshell, that's what poetry always has given me. It's given me the access to my superpower. And so this is the other award that I was going to show.
What's that one?
Yeah, just a few awards. And this was also, you've actually been a rhythm and poetry a few times, right?
Okay, that's graffiti blues ones, yeah.
Absolutely. So the artist achievement award.
Okay, yeah.
Best stage presence.
Okay.
Yeah. So for me, all of those, I have my little victories between me and my collective, because I look at them as stepping stones,
right,
for self. Now, it does not mean I'm the best or I'm better than you, or you, but it does, in my own personal journey, it is a marker. It is a checkpoint. I'm a Mario Kart kid, too.
There you go.
You feel me? So, it is a checkpoint in the journey that lets me know, like, you're actually making progress. You know, in college, kids that actually was blessed to actually make it to college, you have all kinds of certificates and degrees.
Right.
But this is our college as artists. That's the one word artists. These are our certificates. These are our degrees.
That's so true. So speaking of journey, so the book, Warrior's Journey, is it published?
No, it's not. It's not published, man. Right. And he's like,
I've been looking for it. I was like, I know this dance be around somewhere.
No, it's not. And the other night, I actually printed out every page of the book. I printed out every page of the book. And I went through it. And I read it back and forth. And I actually made a decision that I have to put it out. A lot of the holdup is a lot of, one thing, I've also, during quarantine, I just started working on a bunch of other projects as well, a lot of books. And I made a decision, sometimes you just got to create, because I'm also not just a sit-down artist. I'm also very active, and I'm also moving. I'm also an entrepreneur, and so I'm also building, I'm also trying to help build value on the art form of spoken word by actually building what it is that we do, that I do as a business. And so that does not always, at the same time, I also build a family, does not always give time for this creation. So that downtime, quarantine, I was able to do a lot of writing, creating. And so what I'm choosing this time period as well is just to kind of just get as many of the projects that I possibly can done,
mm-hmm.
and then just start launching.
Okay.
And that might be like once again, an eccentric, an unorthodox way of doing things, but it's the way that's working for me currently. So that way, when I'm in creation mode, I'm in creation mode. And when I'm in grind mode, connect networking mode, I can be in that mode.
So I see you got a record in here, but are you recording new material, new music? Because I know I haven't seen your Instagram and seen you in the studio, seeing some there's a face right there.
So I like how you can see me and I can't see you, brother. I'm like sometimes I'm like, yeah, you can see my little face. But look, along with all those projects that I'm working on currently, is another project that I have been working on for some time, which is my spoken word album, Pain to Power. And so that is finished up. I guess we can just say I'm just waiting on timing with it. As far as putting it out, putting that out, I have all the tracks finished up. And so I am going to start just releasing some of the tracks. The other pieces, I wanted some visuals to the majority of the tracks on the album, and I wanted to release them like that rather than just releasing them. The whole point is to try to bring something different to the game of spoken word and not just doing the same thing that we're used to doing and that we used to kind of just like bypass. So my producer, actually, this is a little gift that he put together, letting me know that the album is finished up on nice. His right. So I don't know if you
can see that. Yeah, I can see it. Yeah,
that's the album cover.
That's tight.
And so, Pain to Power. So, A Warrior's Journey, the book, and Pain to Power, they all tell the pre-story. They all tell, I just summarized a lot of what built me into the artist that I am.
Yeah.
But the book goes and tells the behind the scenes stories of like the resilience, mm-hmm. right? The ability to rebel against the resistance. There's a lot of it that talks about a lot of what I was going through as I was traveling on the road. There was a lot of struggle and resistance with even like leaving home.
Right.
You know what I mean? Losing loved ones. A lot of learning how to hone my spiritual gifts, right? A lot of different battles with depression. A lot of battles with self. I talk a little bit about, I don't know if you're familiar with Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey.
Yeah.
But I also use that formula, which is the formula that a lot of action adventure movies and books use, which is the separation of your ordinary world, so the call to adventure, the separation from your ordinary world, and then the initiation into a new world, and then all the battles that you'll go through until you reach your death, and then your rebirth, and then eventually you go through another battle, and you'll also receive the elixir of life or the golden key or whatever it is that you're meant to actually bring back from your journey,
right.
And come back home. And then you go through another journey. And so the warrior's journey kind of encompasses, it just talks about that. It shares those stories and it's a poetic documentation of a faith journey and a purpose walk.
Yeah.
Oh, that's that.
People that one. I'm going to keep people that one.
The first, and there's like one short story in the beginning of the book, and it is about, I call it the long way home, and it is talking about, it is depicting everything that took place that led up to me getting shot, right? So me walking home, and that even that day at school. And then it actually ends with me on the doorstep. That's the story that I wrote in the book. Then on the album actually opens. The intro to the album, the first track is called The Doorstep.
Mm-hmm.
And it opens with a skit of me running to the door, pounding on the door, yelling out help. And then the shooter actually coming to the doorstep and actually has our dialogue on the doorstep. And then that skit ends with me opening the door, running into the door, and then it goes into the gunshot. Bah, bah. And then then it goes straight into the second track in the first poem on the album, which is Anniversary. I don't know if you're familiar.
Not working at all, my cell phone's ringing. I pick it up and answer the call, bro. He shot me, called 911. Then a phone slipped out my hands, my body was turning numb. I prayed to the Lord not to let me go. If it really wasn't my time, he should have let me know. I would have got ready, packed my bags for the journey, or duck and dodged and avoided the gurney because this is the reason why I'm twitching my eyes. All this drama steady bringing me trauma. Traumatized, I'm feeling scared like a baby lion in the nursery. This is the day of my anniversary, of the first time that I had to be rushed to emergency.
So anniversary, you can actually find anniversary on YouTube.
Okay.
And it is the piece that I wrote. I actually wrote, took me 3 years, 3 years to finish it completely, but I started writing it fresh out the hospital.
Okay.
So I was about 17 and a half when I, and I wrote like one verse each year. and it tells the story of that whole ordeal.
Okay.
And so all of this is packaging up all of that pain, trauma, so that way I can move to the second phase of my life. And that's kind of where we are now, standing into my kingship, right? Going from warriorhood to kingship.
So tell me about that. Tell me about the podcast, King Me.
Hey, yo, Play, we back.
Hey, Coon, I think we back.
Hey, yo, Play, we back.
Hey, yo, Coon, I think we back.
Once again.
Kings and queens of the world, welcome to
King Me,
a podcast on holistic
flyness,
excellence, and a philosophy on how to
win at life.
Peace, family, what up?
Extra. Peace, family, what's good? I see the king in you. You see the king in me.
What's the choice? And I got one episode that I want to talk about. But talk about King Me with you and Kit, Chris and Play.
For sure, man. Once again, shout out to you for doing all your research, really knowing what's up. Like, nah, I'm gonna keep you with me, man. So when people ask questions about Coon the Poet, like, hey, man, talk to my man. Like, don't even, you know what I mean? Like, I'm tired of explaining to y'all. Y'all don't listen to me anyway. Listen to Jamal. Yeah, so King Me, in a nutshell, King Me is a podcast that's built on a philosophy of once you make it to the other side of the board in the game of checkers, right?
Right.
We think and yell out what?
King Me.
And so it's a podcast where we talk about different tools and methods of empowerment, personal development, holistic flyness, excellence. So we talk a lot about Black excellence, like what does that look like, and actually reshaping like the ideology of what success looks like.
Right.
So go ahead, bro, because I know you had a.
So one question, because when I was hearing the episode of Winning the Game of Life, and then even Seasons, I heard the one about on Winning the Game of Life. You talked about generation curse,
yep.
And you're pointing out that it can go on when someone doesn't finish the job, the siblings or the kids will take over the brunt of that, or unparalleled idealism that keep on going through the generations and stuff. So it's like it's almost like a family curse and stuff. But this is generational, as you point out. So tell me about that. About that as being, is that what Black people have been going through so long right now? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, my fault, bro. I'm actually asking my lady to capture some of this for IG.
Okay.
So, but to answer your question, and it's funny because that conversation of legacy came up again today, because that is also a driving force behind everything that I do and that we do as a collective. And as you know, I'm a part of a lot of things. And so being a part of a lot of things, bro, I realized rolling on my solo after the journey and all of that, I needed to link up. Like when as we know, when two or more come together, you know, we're more powerful, your God will be. And so what we decided to do was to come together to start kind of pushing this energy of camaraderie, of brotherhood, and of legacy, and really teaching that. And mind you, me, my bro, Chris and Clay, and also like a lot of other brothers and sisters that sit at the table with us, some of us, we come from some kind of like some rocky foundations of legacy. Like, we come from some trauma. We come from some stuff. We got a lot of stuff in our background, from drug addiction to just dysfunctional household trauma, broken homes. And we just made a decision that we can't control what the legacy that we're past. Hmm. What we can control is what we pass down.
Right.
You feel me? And so, and so that is, you know, I do that, of course, through poetry, but it's also bigger than poetry. And so as many different outlets as you possibly can, the podcast, when we started the podcast, it was because we started really rocking and bonding and brothers. We realized that we always get caught up in some big dope conversations.
Mm.
And it was a lot of gems, a lot of jewels, like a lot of like, just a lot of nuggets that were dropped in those conversations, whether it was by myself, by him, or whomever else was engaged in the conversation. And one thing that, so my bro Clay was just like, yo, we gotta find a way to document this. He was just like, yo, this need to be on wax. And at first he had started like putting on this phone recorder, and then he's also like a real like sound engineer nut, right? Like in his brain, like he's big on sound quality and how things sound. He's like, yo, this ain't cool. And the next time he had called me over for us to just, you know, kick it like we do. And then he had some recording equipment. And then the next time he had microphones. Mm-hmm. And then the next time he had, you know, a camera. Like, it, and it saw it was a building.
Building, yeah.
Of this podcast and of this thing, because it all came back down to us addressing the fact that, like, a lot of the reasons why we weren't able to fully succeed and do what we do was because we didn't really have the resources and or the support. Mm. And then anytime we asked for the support and the assistance, a lot of folks, depending on who, didn't want to assist, didn't have the availability to assist, or genuinely didn't know how.
Right.
Because they didn't know what it was that we were trying to do. Because a lot of the things that we talk about are very new ideologies, right? We're talking about progressive mindset and just doing things differently,
right,
than the traditional old school way. We're talking about, like, instead of us being in competition with each other as Black men, like, what would happen if you actually, you know, look out for your brother, like, love on your brother?
Mm.
What would happen if male lions, if you saw about 100 male lions together, or even 20 male lions together, right? What kind of power would that exude if male lions can all come together and walk in unity? You know what I mean? Like, right. So a lot of it is breaking generational curses, and more than just family generational curses, but generational cycles and curses on the Black community, right?
Right.
So like the Black poverty cycle,
right,
of we can never come together and we can never come together and build.
Oh.
We can never as we can never get money together without it being a problem eventually.
Right.
We, you know, ego always being the issue in any time that you come together, you know, at any time Black people come together, ego being the issue. And so that's a lot of things that we address. In order to address that, we have to claim our own stuff.
Okay.
Right? We have to get to the place of like, yo, I got traumas in this area, I'm not perfect here. And so, because on stage I have a set time, right? As cool as poet, I have a set time to where I can't explain all of that stuff. I can't really allow people to get to know me as much as I would like to. But on the podcast, you're able to see up close and personal, right? The real me, and also we call it the cloth talk, right?
Nice.
The brotherhood cloth talk, the kingship, and what it looks like. So yeah.
Okay. So I only got like 2, 3, 4 questions. And
you know, all good, bro. Let's take some time just for you.
Thank you, man. So I like to bring this up. This is one of the main questions I like using on my podcast. So the question is always, so in the poetry community, you got literary poets, people who write poetry in the pages, in books, and sell them off that. We call them page poets. And then we got the people that are on stage doing the performances, maybe selling CDs and recording stuff, and those are the stage poets. So it's always been a big rift between the stage poets and the page poets or literary performers. Mm-hmm. So my biggest thing I'm going to ask you, where do you feel comfortable at, Coon? Do you feel comfortable on the page, the stage, or both?
Well, to be honest, bro, like, I feel comfortable as me. And that's the whole, like, so I feel comfortable doing what my heart allows me, whatever is freeing in my heart at the time. Now, to be honest, I understand the power of being able to speak without the page, right? Because I do know, and this is something we talk to a lot of our students too, a lot of the up-and-coming poets, that sometimes the page and or phone, it can actually be a block. It can block your energy.
Right.
It can actually kind of distract the crowd unless you understand stage presence and you understand how to position yourself to where when you're reading off, it's not looking, you're not disconnecting yourself from the crowd.
Right.
But I try to, especially in my earlier years, you never would have saw me reading from the page. You never would have saw me even reading from the phone. And at that point, at that time, I was really making a point. And I had, I guess you would say, I felt like I had a point to prove. Because a lot of my strength lied in memorization. That's a lot of my strength, a lot of the power lied in the fact that I actually spent a lot of time with my pieces. They weren't just something I wrote that day. They were pieces that I believed in. It was more than spoken word, it was spoken work. Mm. And so I shout out to the OG Acronyms. So me and Acronyms had a great conversation. I hope I'm making a point. We had a great conversation one night on our way out to Oakland, to the Air Lounge. This was years ago, right? Mm-hmm. We were in the back of the van. Talking about poetry and performing, and we realized the point that I made with is that it's so important to build a relationship with your piece as if she or he was your significant other. Mm. And so that's something that I always strive to do, right? And so when you're with your significant other, you want to study, you want to treat her like college, you want to know her. You want to know it like the back of your hand. You want to be able to recognize her from a distance. You want to be able to recognize her regardless of what she's wearing, how her hair is placed, whatever her hairdo is, or even whatever facial expression that she's wearing. You want to be able to almost hear her thoughts before she thinks them and speaks them. And that's the same way. That's the same kind of relationship you want with your piece. You want to be able to jump in with your piece in the middle. You want to be able to deliver your piece fast, slow, different voice. You want to be able to play with your piece and have fun with it. You want it to be able to link and tie and align with your heart and with your spirit. You want to be ready at all times if somebody said, hey, yo, can you hear that? And then, that piece, and as I've grown as of late, because especially during this quarantine season, I've been doing just a lot of writing. Because there is a difference between performance poetry and then good poetry writing, like just writing for the sake of getting the thoughts out, and for the sake of prose, right? Just telling this story. And so I've also, in this season, I've also come to terms with being okay with just like come up with like something that I wrote down after a dream, reading a journal entry. I do believe there's power that can be placed behind everything, but not all power has to sound the same, and not all power has to feel the same. There is a such thing as gentle power. And so I'm actually enjoying getting to know that that side of my artistry and that part of me, and actually introducing that part of me to my audience, to my support base too.
So my next question is, since there's always been, since Sacramento always had a poet laureate in its ranks and stuff, and the current poet laureate kind of threw people on a little bit of a topsy-turvy, basically, Andrew kind of threw people on a little topsy-turvy. Mm-hmm. I've always, Andrew Defy?
I know off the show. I said, did it?
But what... It dawned on me a while ago, and I wanted to ask you: have you ever thought about being a poet laureate? Your thought is ever thought of you being it, poet laureate Coon
of Sacramento? Yeah. To be honest with you, so I think that is what it is. Like, to be honest, bro, a lot of things that have come my way, I didn't compete for them. Mm. I didn't like even the awards that I just showed and shared with you. I wasn't like, yo, I need you to vote for me. I need you to vote for me right now, bro, so we can get this.
Right.
Because I wasn't on a journey to grind to be recognized in Sacramento as a dope literary poet. Hmm. I was on a journey to build a higher platform for the sake of voice and being able to change things.
Okay.
So with that, if that comes along the lines, so me and Andrew have had that conversation a few years ago, actually.
Okay.
Where he hit me up, he was like, yo, look, right now they're looking for the next poet laureate. I think you should go. I think you should apply, blah, blah, blah. It didn't tug on my spirit at the time. It could have been just for a lot of things of what I was going through. The other piece is, I know I still have a long journey ahead of me in just like the literary poet area. Because I have not put my book out yet.
Okay. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I'm known as a performance poet, spoken word artist, but I do have a huge respect for the literacy.
Right.
I do have a huge respect for writing, and an understanding of the culture of literacy and the culture of poetry. I don't think a lot of people really understand the difference between the world,
right,
and also the very much the alignment between the worlds. And so there's an ongoing debate on that's not poetry or right, that's poetry. And one thing that I do say often until I got tired of telling folks, because I, after a while, would just let people think and believe what they want to think and believe. But spoken word is poetry. Poetry does not have to be spoken word.
True.
And so there is, and especially when you start, there are different collectives and groups in Sacramento, just in the same period, that pride themselves on just the literacy, right? The writing, the formatting on paper.
Right.
And then there are other collective venues and groups that pride themselves on that spit. Right. And these, of course, it's more of those that come from the, you know, some of the hip hop background, some of the more the outspoken background, more the verbal kind of background of the art form. There's so many different layers, bro, to venture to. I do believe before my time is up that I will have spent time in almost all.
But are you going to be the poet laureate, sir, in the future? You're going to be it, dog. You're going to be it.
So tell me this. Can I ask you a question?
Answer.
Why do you feel that? Why do you feel like I will be a poet laureate?
So what makes me think that you will be a potential candidate for poet laureacy is not only your work, but you are the community. You are part of the community. As you told me right now about your leadership as you've grown, and also being with the youth and even showing them that their direction, where they need to go. And even you are able to get in places in both the executive or corporate spots, and also the street spots where a lot of people don't go. That's one thing that makes it different in the what the past poet laureates did to now. Yeah, you can have white poet laureates are so much, but it's what a poet laureate can get in places. And I've always looked at that with Andrew, hopefully. But also you can go in spots like Sacramento Poetry Center, and you can also go down to the spot in Mahogany, not even Mahogany, but even lower than that, and still be able to be Coon the Poet in a school, and people are like, oh man, it's Coon the Poet. That's why I see that you can be a potential candidate, a powerful candidate for being the poet laureate that's needed. Because that was the poet's victory run. It's not as necessary as it was before.
Yeah, respect, bro. And I appreciate that. I appreciate your insight and your outside. Because so a lot of some people are just like, no, you should be the poet laureate to be the best. You know what I mean? Or you should go, you're the best. And for me, like I said, I just look at things differently. First of all, it's work. This journey is work. It's real work. To be a poet laureate, you're going to have to put in some major work as a writer. And then you're also going to have to be an extreme advocate for other writers and artists, which that's a natural thing for me because I'm naturally, although I'm the majority of my life, I was a little brother, I'm naturally a big brother. So anybody who, whether you are, younger or older than me, if you are up and coming into some, if you are trying to get into a door that I've already opened, I realize it's something about me, nightlife scene, right? If I got access to a particular spot, you want to get into this door, and I can sense that you good peoples, and y'all do with me. And so, I hear you 1,000%. And you know what? Maybe that is for me on this journey. I do want to see one thing. I want to see for sure. I want to see spoken word recognized a little bit more in the game. In the poetry game. I want to see poets. I want to see poetry respected more. Period. In art, right? And then also, I want to say it's not corporate, but I want to see more value and respect put on the craft. When you reach out to a poet to perform at whatever your event is, have your dollar, have your budget, and know that it's important for you to have your budget, because although we do what we do out of passion and love, we still need to eat. At the end of the day, when I get off this microphone, I'm still gonna have to check with my family. I'm still gonna have to make sure that they're good. I'm still gonna have to check on my soon-to-be wife. I'm gonna have to check on my kids by the way of nurture, and they have needs, and I have needs, and we have needs as artists and as people. And if we can get to the place where everybody respects that rather than respecting it for the moment that you need us at your event, right? Oh, I just need a poet real quick. Then that means that you need to be able to, to take care of the value of that poet. Yeah. So if that means that I got to stand in that seat, I got to sit in that seat to help get the value for us, recognize, I'm with it.
Yo. So my last question, since you are a hip hop head, what are your top five rappers?
Well, were my top five rappers, because nowadays I'm cool. I listen to country.
Well, I'm just saying, the ones you growing up with, what were your top five?
man, because the way the game is right now. But you know, there's a few that's still keeping the game. But so growing up, bro, I grew up on DMX. I grew up on a lot of people feel what they want to feel. I don't care. Like, I grew up on Eminem. I grew up on Tupac. I grew up on. Like, and you know, back in that time, everything was more organized. The game was more organized, where you knew what camp was what, right? If it was Rough Riders, you knew who was a part of Rough Riders, right? If it was Dog Pound, you knew who was a part of Dog Pound. You know, things was broken down by record labels and camps. And so I also was a big fan, by the way, of my auntie, of Bone Thugs and Harmony. Right? And so a lot of, that was a gangster rap era too, being from the West Coast. That was what was around me and played all day long. But I always loved artists. I didn't know it at that point, but I love artists that spoke spiritually. I love artists that had a different sound. And even to this day, like I connect with spoken word artists that have their own voice and their own sound. Like if I can, and even from traveling from here all the way to the East, if you have a different kind of frequency and vibration that comes through you that catches my attention, if I can close my eyes and catch my attention, I know there's something that has to do with your spirit. There's something different about you.
You got one more. One more rapper.
Let me think. All right, let me try to, because I mean, there's a lot, bro. Who da?
So you got right, DMX, Eminem, Tupac, Bone Thugs and Harmony. You got one more.
All right. Just for the sake of the game of now, you know what? Yeah, my man Joyner Lucas. I'm gonna have to go New Kid. There's a few others on the newer-ish, but kind of fading out.
Right.
Kendrick. At one point, Wale, I was rocking with him. And nowadays, bro, I just look at I look for those that can inspire me.
Right.
If you can't, it's like I'm like, yo, if I feel myself like not being able to write after listening to you, like, you know what I mean? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to turn that off.
Right.
But if I find myself, if I get a chill after listening to you, and so, like, I just drove, me and my lady just drove out to, last summer, we drove out to Grambling, down to Louisiana. And I remember I put on a whole Joyner Lucas album. Really, I just put on his playlist and I just let it all play. Because the content of what he say, his lyrical content, and then just his creative mindset is completely inspiring and completely like it gives me that old school chill of like, ooh, let me write. Let me spit something real quick. You know? Yeah, so
Joyner Lucas, all right.
Joyner Lucas. They call Joyner Lucas. If we're talking new school of who's still rocking, who's still catching, Joyner Lucas, J. Cole, Kendrick, and even newer. Who was I listening?
This is a pretty question. Now I think about it. Why is it always J. Cole and Kendrick always throwing out like not like an afterthought, but always like, yeah, you know, J. Cole, Kendrick, and then they just keep on going. It's almost like those two names have to be put together to show as, like, respect, but it's also, like, they don't like all the other trap stuff. They just like those two and just keep on moving. That's the hip-hop thing. Why is that? I was wondering about that.
I think it's because those two do a good job with showing the consciousness, right, and their commercial.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, they were some of the two that got through the door on a commercial level, but then they also spoke a lot of consciousness once they got through, or they went back and grabbed it. And so on a mainstream level, that's why a lot of people, J. Cole and Kendrick. On an underground level, there's a lot of cats, and for me, I wish they can pop into my mind right now. But on the underground level, there's a lot of dope artists that do a good job of that. They just not recognized higher, you know what I mean, on that mainstream level. But like even my guy Locksmith.
Oh yes,
Locksmith. You know what I mean? Like Locksmith is a beast. And then even like I got folks who I was blessed to touch stages with. And if you go out to like DC area, Baltimore, like on out there, they make what we consider underground the mainstream. Like their quote unquote locals are like they're the ones. And so shout out to my guy, you should have saw it.
Diamond District.
You said what?
I said the Diamond District. What's his name? Odyssey, and also YU, and all those guys. The Mellow Music Group. They always do that stuff out there. Yeah.
Yeah. They're the DMV. There you go. Another thing too, man. Bringing it back home, you know, Sacramento proud to those that you know, and I know he's not originally like born in Sac, but you know, I know he does put on for Sac. Shout out to my brother Kariqa Bailey.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean. I'm gonna always. There's a lot of politics and hurt right now going on around stuff. I'm always give props to those that are to what props do as far as a grinding level. So shout out to everybody in Sacramento, regardless of what your content and even what your energy is. That's grinding music game, poetry game, too. So shout out to Mozzie, shout out to Lavish D, shout out to the very late heartbreaking Chris. You know what I mean? We got a few shout out to Dory Rock. You know what I mean? Shout out to King Kahali, Sacramento legend. So Sacramento for sure. Yeah, we got a few that really have, you know, shout out to the brother Lynch's, shout out to Decebo, shout out to Marvelous. We have some that really have put Sacramento on the map or participated in putting Sacramento on the map for a long time. Shout out to T Nutty. You know what I mean? So I'm gonna always do that because I am a legacy of Sacramento. I'm gonna always make sure that I get props where props do, even if you don't see me banging it out of my car radio. I'm gonna always salute those that put on behalf of the city.
Yeah. Well, Coon, we are coming down to the closing. I'd like to give you a moment to tell people about your social media and your website where they can find you and everything.
All right. Well, look, you can tap in with me. Everything Coon the Poet. So IG Coon the Poet, all one word. There is another page that is no longer active. It has underscores. That's not me. That's not my active page. So if you want to like it, if you want to follow what I got coming up, what I'm doing, what I'm going to be doing, want to follow the whole way of your heart movement, then follow me on IG, Coon the Poet, all one word, Facebook, Coon the Poet, my artist page, and then also my personal page that a lot of folks are familiar with. You can find me. Chris Coon, but I just ask that you do respect Coon the Poet.
No doubt. I ain't gonna lie. When I checked Chris Coon, I got the senator guy. I was tripping. I was like, "Who the heck is this white guy?"
There's reasons behind that because so what happens is a lot of people, and I'll just say this as we close out, a lot of people for their own comfort will try to make you into what they're comfortable with you being, right? They'll try to call you or they'll try to brand you as in their comfort, and I'm not that kind of cat. So it's Coon the Poet, it's Brother Coon, it's everything. And, you know, I'm gonna always bang Coon because that's my last name and my legacy. Chris Coon for certain paperwork, but to be all the way honest, I bought a Coon the Poet, so I own my stage name as well. So, and it's all for the sake of making them respected. So y'all put some respect on my name, put some respect on my family legacy, put some respect on, you know, just put some respect on the brand, and it will respect you back.
No doubt. Well, thanks, Coon, for doing this show for me, and much love and more bodies of work to you, man. I'm salute you.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you, man. Anything else you need from me as I jump off, because I got another meeting to go.
Nah. Just want to let people know. Watch out for them and get on. All right.
Thanks. So y'all wear your head up, heart out. Y'all wear your heart. Keep your eyes and ears open for more happening with the Wear Your Heart movement. We got a food giving coming up. Where Your Heart Food's giving. We also got more poetry things and different shows coming up, and a lot of other different programs happening with Your Heart Food, nonprofit. So, with that being said, it's your brother Kool Napoli. Love y'all. Head up, heart out. Where Y'all.
For more information, please go to linktr.ee/iambiczine. IAMBICZINE. Thank you.